Yes, I was fired. It happens to most coaches. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to just lie there in the fetal position and whimper?
That's Marv Levy, who was on this show a few weeks ago. And, you know, our show is always about performance and leadership. The head coach, now the general manager, Marv Levy, has to always be thinking about the chemistry, the unit that he has on the field that has to get it done. And if there is somebody that knows more about the unit, whether it's on the battlefield or on the playing field, let me know, because I think Rocky Blyer is certainly one of the best choices we can have on the show to talk about that. Rocky Blyer, Pittsburgh Steelers legend, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nick, thanks very much.
How is life these days? What are you up to? I know you just got back from Italy, so you're having a chance to spend time with your family.
Oh, yeah, we were in Italy for a couple weeks and enjoyed it first time I was there, and took my family over there and did the tourist thing and hit about five cities, and so all the sightseeing places that were available, and my God, there are so many there, and so yeah, it was a wonderful trip. Yep, spending time with the family there, and then as well, I'm on the speaker circuit, so that takes up a great part of my time, and then I have a contracting business as well. So between the three of us, three of those things, they keep you quite busy, as you well know.
Well, let's take you back into the past. You were a late round pick for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Rocky, and not a lot of people expected that much out of you. And the story that I want to hear, and I think the audience wants to hear, is about that. When you speak to audiences, people crave hearing your insight into what it was like in Vietnam, what you had to endure, your experience from there, and where you came from there. Tell us first and foremost, when you were drafted, what happened with you, your experience with Chuck Knoll, and the sense of expectation that he brought to those early Steelers.
Well, you know, I got drafted before Chuck Knoll came here. So the year before, actually, in 1968, I was a 16th round draft choice, as you'd made mention, out of the University of Notre Dame. Bill Austin was the head coach here, came from the Green Bay Packers, and he was in the third year of a three-year contract. I always tell people, tongue-in-cheek to some degree, is that they always wonder, well, how'd you make the team as a 16th round draft choice? I said, can you remember who played for the Steelers in 67? Of course, there's a pregnant pause, and I said, well, that's how come I made the team in 1968. And then I played 11 games that season and got drafted. In 1968 and 1969, 1968 was the height of the Vietnam War. There were more people involved. There was troop escalation up to about 500,000 troops over in Vietnam. And so several of us who had played professional football, you know, kind of fell through the cracks. But a lesson that, you know, there was a kind of a lesson there that you learned was a lesson of expectations or what you set, or what you set in your own mind. You know, because I thought, well, from my perspective, I thought, well, if you make a professional team, they take care of those obligations, meaning that they will get you into a reserve unit and or to a National Guard unit, like other players had throughout the league years previously. And so the happiest day of my life was that day in training camp when Bill Austin came up to me and said, hey, listen, Rock, said, we think that, took me aside, and he said, hey, this letter, which happened to be my 1A classification, was open accidentally, listen.
As far as you know.
As far as I know, yes, accidentally, and he said, now we think you're good enough to make this team, and we'll take care of this obligation for you. Two of the biggest things that were hanging over my head or any young rookie's head was, one, you know, whether you're going to make the team, and there was confirmation, and secondly, at that time, you know, with Vietnam hanging over one's head, whether or not you're going to get into a reserve unit. Well, they're going to take care of it, man, you know. Well, I knew I was in trouble a couple months later when they said, we're having a little trouble. Do you know anybody back in Wisconsin, where I'm from, that could get you in the reserve back there? And I'm thinking, oh, man, if I knew somebody back there, I'd already be in the reserve. And they said, well, you know, it's the congressman got defeated and the general retired and our contacts are, you know, weren't what they used to be. And so I thought, hey, okay, I'm in trouble. So, and I fell through, and I ultimately got my draft notification. And And there was a handful of guys throughout the league that it happened to them, and I go to Vietnam, and like thousands of other guys, and I'm a grunt, I'm an enlisted guy, I'm with a line outfit, end up with the AmeriCal Division up in I Corps with the with a 196th Light Infantry Brigade, and I was with the 31st Army over there, and got in country about May of 69, and ultimately got wounded then 4 months later in August.
Well, tell us about that day. Tell us about that day. Tell us about, you know, what it was like, what the temperature was like, what the sense was in terms of the unit that you worked with there, and what sort of lessons you applied from your time in football to trying to survive and perform with all that pressure and all that danger.
You know, the atmosphere at the time is that, you know, Vietnam was a 12-month gig, a 13-month gig. It was a replacement army. And so when I came in, I was new meat, quote, so to speak, with a unit that had been pretty much intact, I think with 4 months was the last time they had got any new replacements coming in. So, you know, unlike today, in those young men and women who are fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan, they go over in units. They train together. They come back together. They fight together. And so there's a certain camaraderie that's established, and there's a certain team aspect that I don't think that we felt over in Vietnam. It took some time, at least, to be comfortable with basically your squad, those people that surrounded your life. So I was with I was in the first platoon, I was in the first squad, and it was those, you know, 15, 20 guys that you get to know, and out of that, it's just a, you know, it's a handful that you are familiar with. People come and go. Anyway, at that moment in time, we were under alert. We had one of the companies, and how it worked in Vietnam was that you had an area of operation. Out of that area of operation, there was usually a battalion that worked at four companies. Two of them were in the field. Two of them were then protecting LZ, or landing zones, for artillery. So you'd rotate off the hill, back into the field, back up the hill, and so on, and that's the way it was. Well, we were up on a hill, and one of the companies got ambushed and were under fire, and we flew out that afternoon. So we were on alert. We flew out, and eventually we were to extract them out, and it was nighttime. And so when we got there, it was late. We carried some dead out. We got that unit out of that area. And in so doing, we got ambushed, and what bodies we were carrying out, we left behind. 2 days, then thereafter, we are now going back in. I'm with a reinforced platoon to go back and extract those bodies, or at least have a secured area where a helicopter can come in and get them out of there. That was our responsibility. So, given that, the tension, we knew that enemy were around, we'd been hit. So we're on alert. Now, we left about dawn. By the time we took a break, a couple hours later, you know, it was maybe 103, 104 on its way up to about 110. The humidity was about 86%. And we got to a little shaded area, and our company commander said, take a break. And so we did, finding our location. Then he said, saddle up. We're moving out of this little wooded area onto an open rice paddy. Now, I was about eighth in line. You got to kind of figure that. I was a grenade launch. I was carrying an M79. And my point man, who is now maybe 40 yards in front of me, 5 yards distance, enemies in the area, eyes, ears open, head on a swivel, you know, just make sure, be aware of what's taking place. From his position out there, he had seen some activity, enemy activity in front of us, a couple soldiers walking across a dike. Well, he got so excited that he opened up fire and started to run after the enemy, which pulled everybody out onto this open rice paddy. They had been set up, and all of a sudden, boy, I hear this machine gun started to level that area on which we were, and I jumped into a rice paddy. Four guys were pinned down in front of me into a lower rice paddy. I saw that machine gun, who was kind of spray in that area, and I try to lob some grenades on top of him just to kind of get those guys out of there when I got hit the first time. And so I kind of dropped back from that position, was out in the open, got behind some protection, and when the four guys were pinned down, got out, I swung back with one of the medics to our commanding officer. We were on the left flank. Everybody else had moved to the right. And so we had swung back, hooked up with a commanding officer. About 20 minutes later, the rest of those guys were in that in the field came back. Now, we were in heavy firefight at that moment in time. A couple guys got killed. And we set up another position. We didn't know what we ran into, whether it was a squad or a platoon. Ultimately, a couple years later, I found out that we ran into a regiment, and it was the same regiment that the company had run into that had been ambushed. And they didn't know what they ran into at that moment in time, and I got hit the second time with a grenade that blew up through my right foot and right knee and right thigh. And we were in a firefight for the remaining part of that day when another platoon fought its way up there, dragged us out of there. It was about midnight by the time we got to a secured area, and they dragged us through the night, and the helicopters came in and then took us to an aid station. Ultimately, out of that whole course, I spent about 9 months in the hospital and went through three operations. And the prognosis was, when I did ask my doctor, whether or not I'd be able to play, of course he said no. He said you won't have the strength and the flexibility and to be able to do it, and that was kind of the first, you know, rejection. But I guess
Rocky, we're going to have to take a break because it's tough, because all of this is important stuff. All of this relates, as I listen to you, I think about what story I wanted to hear from Pat Tillman when he got back safely from Afghanistan.
Right.
I think about the people that put their whole lives in jeopardy every day today in Iraq and in Afghanistan. I think about the heroism, the danger itself, and what so much of us take for granted. This is also broadcast on American Forces Network, and we're so honored to have Rocky Blyer talking about Vietnam. We're going to talk about his injury, about his comeback, and we'll be joined by Dr. John Elliott to talk about how people come back from circumstances most people could never, ever even conceive of. We'll be right back on Head Games Radio in just a minute.